Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And welcome to Food Network Obsessed. This is the podcast where we dish on all things Food Network with your favorite Food Network stars. I'm your host, Jamie Sire, and today we have a chef with us to talk about his easy bake oven, Japanese heritage, and why one day he decided to sell all of his stuff and move to Costa Rica. He is a chef, restaurateur, entrepreneur, and philanthropist. He is an Iron Chef America winner, and he's going to be on the new season of Tournament of Champions. It's Justin Sutherland. Justin, welcome to the podcast. We just had Eric Adjapong on. We were reminiscing about the brew fest that we all did together before the world shut down. So it's so great to reconnect with you here on Food Network Obsessed.
Awesome. No, thank you. Thank you for having me. And yeah, Eric's become one of my really, really good friends. So that's awesome. You get to talk to him. He's crushing it right now.
He is, as are you. So we're so excited to talk to you about all of your projects that you have going on right now. But let's start off with a little true or false. You asked for an easy bake oven on your fifth birthday. Is that true?
I absolutely did. My dad said no. It's early 80s. You know, boys weren't getting easy bake ovens. But my grandma said yes, and I got it anyway.
Well, you didn't look back, apparently. So apparently you loved cooking at a very early age. What were you watching or experiencing that kind of pulled you in that direction?
I was obsessed with the show Yan Can Cook. Like Martin Yan, I don't know. My grandma used to take care of us when we were kids, and that was always on the TV there. So I was watching that, and really was watching both of my grandmothers. They were always in the kitchen. Food was just kind of their love language. And, you know, so just following them around really got me into food.
Yeah, it seems like you really have a special relationship with your grandmothers. I saw on Instagram you gave your obachan, or your grandmother, her first pair of Jordans for Christmas, which, you know, is the wholesome content we all need right now. How did she kind of integrate Japanese food and culture into your childhood?
In a very, very big way. You know, when she came to this country, she spoke zero English. You know, she met my grandpa when he was in the Korean War, stationed over there, moved over here. So food was really the only way that she could, you know, teach us about Japan and get us connected to her, you know, her past. I mean, we brought our friends over to her house all the time for sukiyaki and sushi. And she was always, food was the way she could share her history with us.
What are some of your favorite things to cook together?
Our two number one dishes that we always brought our friends over to her house and that me and my brother still love are definitely her pork tonkatsu. And sukiyaki.
For anybody that doesn't know, what is sukiyaki?
Yeah, sukiyaki is a very traditional, like, one pot meal. That kind of every family in Japan kind of has their own ingredients that they add to it. But they have a table, like a coffee table in the living room with a burner built in the middle. And they make this rich, hearty broth. And you throw in tofu and shaved beef and noodles and shiitake mushrooms and cabbage and all kinds of things. And then everybody just sits around this table and eats out of the same pot.
I love that. Have you had an opportunity to visit Japan?
I have, yeah, many times. When I was younger, quite a bit. My mom worked for the airline, so up until 26, we got free flight benefits. So growing up, we had a yearly trip to Japan, so I've been many times.
At some point, your path kind of went a different direction. You actually went to business school. in preparation for law school. What about that path at the time seemed compelling? And then what ultimately changed your mind?
I think it's twofold. I was always wanted to be a lawyer. Like growing up, my favorite show was The Practice. Like we watched that with my family. And I don't know, business school is just kind of the natural path if you didn't know exactly what you wanted to do. And, and you know, cooking wasn't a glamorous profession whatsoever, especially, you know, back then. So I just, you know, business school was the default, but I always thought I wanted to be a lawyer.
What made you change your mind?
I got my business management degree. I was getting ready to go to law school. I was selling mortgage in that summer and just sitting in a cubicle and cold calling and, you know, just continuing research and all this. I just remember calling my dad and I was like, there's no way. I was like, this is what the next 40 plus years of my life are going to, there's no way. And he was the one who was like, you've always loved cooking. You've always loved food. Why don't you try culinary school? And, you know, you're young enough. If it doesn't work out, you got your business degree. We can restart, but don't get into life now and hate what you do.
Yeah. I mean, that's good advice. And by the way, the lawyer to chef pipeline is actually somewhat common on this podcast for some reason, believe it or not. But you attended culinary school in Atlanta. You stayed there working for several years after. What were some of your formative experiences like in the kitchen after you graduated?
I mean, it's really the first time that I started working in professional kitchens. And nowadays, these are things that we don't celebrate. You know, we're trying to have a better, you know, grasp on our industry. But I remember working at the first like fine dining restaurant I worked at in Atlanta. I could work lunch and prep. Like they wouldn't let me work dinner service. One day, the dinner guy called out sick and the chef came up to me and she was like, this is your chance. You're up. You're working saute on dinner tonight, which was, I mean, what I've been working for the whole time. And I remember cooking this foie gras and we had a little dump sink over by the side where we'd throw our dirty pans in, cook this foie gras. All this rendered foie gras fat was in the pan. And I went to toss the pan into the sink and the front of the pan caught the bottom of the lip of the dump sink. And like in slow motion, I watched this foie gras fat come up in the air and just land directly on my arm and like degree burn it down to the tendons.
Oh my gosh.
I ran to the bathroom. I cut the top of my sock off and put it over my arm.
What?
Didn't tell anybody because I had to finish service. Like this is my first, I'll never get to work dinner service again. Like I can't tell chef that I just burnt myself and have to go to the hospital. So I continued service all the way through. And then afterwards I was like, chef, I think I should go to the hospital. And like pulled the ripped sock off my arm and showed her. And she was like, when did this happen? I was like, at the beginning of service.
What does she say?
I mean, she gave me a fist bump for my making it through service and also told me I was an idiot and sent me to the hospital.
Well, obviously you're okay now. I mean, do you still have like scars from that?
I do. I have a sizable, I mean, it's covered with tattoos now, but yeah, I definitely have a sizable scar. I mean, yeah, it was insane, but there was no way I was going to leave the line and go to the hospital on my first day getting to work the station I've always wanted to work.
Is paying your dues kind of a common theme when you're a young chef like that?
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. I think the way in which you pay your dues are different now. The abuse is a little less, but I mean, you have to. I mean, it's a skilled trade. You need to learn.
Well, I want to get into your career growth in your hometown of St. Paul and opening your restaurant, Handsome Hog. But before we get to that, I am super curious about your quarter life crisis, as you called it. After working a few years, you sold all of your belongings, bought a one-way ticket to Costa Rica, and ended up staying there for about 8 months. What was happening in your life at the time that kind of forced you to hit the reset button?
Yeah, I mean, it was just kind of a culmination of so many things. You know, I had finally got where I thought I wanted to be in a restaurant path. I started working at Meritage, which was the restaurant in St. Paul that I really wanted to work for. Worked my way up from garde manger to sous chef to chef de cuisine and opened this new restaurant. There was a breakup in there at some point. I had just totaled my car like 2 weeks prior.
Wow.
And like probably shouldn't have walked away from it. Like my car was mangled and didn't have a scratch. And just all these things came up. I was like, man, what am I doing with my life? Like I got this job that I wanted, but you know, I wasn't making enough money. I was working 100 hours a week. And I think just everything just kind of closed in. And I was like, I need to go figure out what's next.
So why Costa Rica?
I just heard stories that was the place to go to figure your stuff out. I had a bunch of friends that had done, you know, previously and spent a considerable amount of time. And I don't know, it was a very spur of the moment decision. I wrote my parents a letter because I couldn't tell them. I was like, just so you know, I'll be leaving for a while.
Wait, they didn't know that you were going?
This was a decision made in 72 hours. Like I had hard service at work, had the car crash, had the breakup with the girlfriend, just all these things. And I was like, I'm out of here.
Well, I don't blame you. I've been to Costa Rica as well. It is a magical place. Would you describe that experience there as kind of transformative?
Absolutely. I mean, mentally and just everything, it changed who I was as a person. I didn't know how long I was going to stay. I thought it was going to be 2-3 weeks and ended up being 8 months. That's, you know, some best friends I still have today. And really, it's always good to step back and, like, you know, evaluate your life. And you never really know who you are until you're just completely by yourself without any, you know, external people saying, this is who we think you are. But when you're completely by yourself and don't know anybody, that's when you figure it out.
Did you work at all while you were there? Or you kind of were just there to kind of reset and kind of reevaluate things?
Yeah, definitely did not work. Well, I was either sleeping in a hammock on the beach or staying in hostels that were $2 a night.
I mean, that doesn't sound too bad. What is your advice to someone out there who might be feeling the same, might be feeling a little burned out, a little uninspired?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, times are a little bit different now, but I think you have to just do that step back. I just think what people expect of us can weigh very heavily on us. And you got to check in with yourself sometimes. And it's okay to, you know, take those mental health breaks and take those breaks in general, just to be by yourself. I think it's very important. Sometimes it's very important to be alone.
Absolutely. And after that trip, you returned back home. You were kind of making some moves to open up your first restaurant, Handsome Hog. When you were making your business plan and kind of visualizing that first restaurant, what were some of the non-negotiables for you?
I had to be the boss. I was done working for people. That was that's why I left. I wanted it to be small. I wanted it to be intimate. Like, I wanted to be able to make the food, be out, talk to the people, and just keep it nice and small. And I think, you know, the business degree helps a lot. Everybody wants to make good food, but there's so much more to the business. I think that's where a lot of us fail, which I have many times, you know, thinking, oh, this is amazing, everyone's going to want it, but you don't take into account the numbers and you got to pay rent.
Yep. The dishes there are described as pork-centric Southern contemporary. How did you bring your classic French training and affinity for Southern food together to create this approach?
And that's what it was really all about for me with Handsome Hog. Like, I love just Southern food, the story behind it, soul food, I mean, the flavors. And then having been classically French trained and working at a fine dining French restaurant, which I still love, but I wanted to take, like, those skills that I had learned and apply them to, you know, very classic Southern food.
How has the culinary community in the Twin Cities kind of evolved over the years? And what do you see for it in the future?
I mean, I think we have one of the greatest food scenes, you know, in the country right now. I think it's extremely innovative. I think when people think about, like, what is food for Minnesota, but, you know, known or unknown. I mean, we have the largest Hmong community in the country, the largest Somalian community in the country, a huge Vietnamese, you know, Native American community. And so there's so much food that resides in Minnesota and in the Twin Cities that really define its culinary landscape. And you know, there's Minnesota nice, but I think, you know, we have this just, like, all, you know, all the chefs here just play nice together. Like, it's awesome. We always cook at each other's restaurants and there's collaborations and pop-ups and just so much support. So yeah, I love being a part of this.
Yeah. And then since opening that first restaurant, you've also added more projects to the portfolio: Obacha Noodles and Chicken, Chickpea Hummus Bar, The Gnome, Woodfire Cantina, Grey Duck Tavern. Your business education certainly being put to good use, I would say. What had you learned in the process of opening Handsome Hog that you were able to apply to these new ventures?
I mean, so many things. Knowing your numbers, like, you have to know how to operate it as a business. I mean, a lot of times, you know, restaurants are passion projects. And if it's just a passion project, my advice is just do it at home. Because it's a very, very expensive venture.
If it's not a passion project, what is your advice for somebody that dreams of opening their own restaurant?
You know the neighborhood, the area you're going into. Again, it comes down to really dialing in those numbers and those food costs and all of the things that are not associated with the food. You know, we focus, especially as when you're chef owners, if you're a chef or someone, you know, for a business person, they're generally watching their numbers. But if you're a chef owner, you're usually more concerned with, you know, the food. And yes, that's the most important thing, but not to the bank.
Yeah. Is there a restaurant concept that you've had on your mind for a while that you would still like to bring to life that you haven't yet?
Yeah, I have one on the way that will be coming out soon. I'm obsessed with egg sandwiches.
Oh, yes, me too.
Obsessed. It's like my favorite food in the world is, like, a good egg sandwich. and I'm obsessed with 90s hip hop. I have a new concept coming that'll be a multi-state kind of quick service concept called Big E.
Okay, like it. Yeah.
Or Big E and the Big E. But it's a high-end egg sandwich concept that we'll be rolling out here in the coming months.
That's amazing. Is there going to be one in New York, hopefully?
New York's on the list. I think we've got, like, you know, 4 or 5 locations in Minneapolis, Portland, Nashville, and definitely New York.
Okay. All right. Well, let me know when that happens. But you are obviously a very ambitious individual, entrepreneur. You're also the co-owner of Hybrid Nation, which is a socially conscious streetwear and lifestyle brand. You co-founded a nonprofit called North Sands to support and provide relief to struggling hospitality workers during the pandemic. And both of these initiatives really focus on support for Black and Brown communities and encourage conversations around diversity and social equality. When we're looking, I guess, specifically at the culinary industry and the food world, what does genuine representation and diversity look like to you?
It's a big question. I mean, if you focus it on the culinary world, I mean, it stems from the beginning. I mean, if you look at brands like Uncle Nearest and we, you know, get their stories, I mean, there was so many times where, you know, people of color, whether it's the cooks, whether it's the dishwashers, whether it's the chef that came up with the menu, was always in the back of the kitchen, but never able to be the face of it. So, I mean, that's a huge part now. And women in the kitchen that are just, we're seeing this insurgence of female chefs that are finally, you know, being, you know, given the platform that they've always deserved. I think, you know, people of color, immigrants, there have always been the backbone of the restaurant industry. So, you know, being able to support and showcase them is important. I mean, being a person of color and, you know, coming up, you know, through this industry and knowing how difficult it's been to, you know, to get any credit has always been tough. And then when I, you know, once I finally got somewhat of a spotlight, you know, looking around and seeing how many other people have not been given that same opportunity. So, you know, I was given a shot, and I want to make sure that everybody else has the opportunity to tell their stories and do their thing.
Coming up next, Justin tells us what it was like to compete against Alex Guarnaschelli on Iron Chef America and teases what we can expect to see on the next season of Tournament of Champions.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
You've competed on Iron Chef America. How certain were you about your foray into competing on television? Did it feel natural? initially?
I don't even remember my Iron Chef. Like, I blacked out. It just happened. I mean, I remember being at work and somebody from Food Network called and they're like, this is a producer from Food Network. Do you want to be an Iron Chef? And I thought I was getting a prank phone call because it was the year I opened Handsome Hog and I was like, somebody's messing with me because I opened my first restaurant. And I think I hung up on them and they called back and they're like, no, this is serious. But I love it. I mean, it's fun. It's always good to win, but it's also a lot of fun.
Yeah. I mean, I can't believe you don't remember it because, I mean, you won. You won against the Iron Chef herself, Alex Guarnaschelli. You finally got to kind of flex those ramen muscles on stage, create some dishes that really reflect your diverse background that we've been talking about it. So, I mean, do you remember what was going through your mind when you were on the clock or do you really not remember anything from that?
I mean, it was a while after. I mean, I had my sous chefs there and like, when we got done, I was like, do you guys remember anything that happened? Like, and then I went and read when it finally aired and I watched it and I was like, oh my God. But we had like practiced so much leading up to it. And I think it's just, you know, you just get into that war mode and I don't know, something clicked. Like I saw red and just went and then it was over.
I mean, how do you prepare for something like that? Obviously not knowing, you know, what the secret ingredient is going to be, but just, you know, kind of honing like the dishes that you maybe would want to represent on the show.
Yeah, I think twofold on that. I mean, we practiced. I grabbed Donald and Brandon, and the first thing we did is just figure out what we can't accomplish in that time frame. So my friend's restaurant was only open for dinner, so we would go there from 8 a.m. until 2 p.m. every day and just practice things that we knew how to do and see if it was something that we could do in that amount of time. Like, we didn't know what the ingredients were. I was like, all right, if I want to make this, is it even possible? So you know what things to check off of your list, like, you can't do this. And then you figure out things you absolutely wanted to do. I was like, no matter what, I'm going to make ramen in 1 hour on TV. I knew I wanted to do it. And the first time I made it, like just making it, it took 19 minutes from beginning to end. And then I practiced it every day. And then by the time we get it done, I made it in 6 minutes. And I was like, all right, if I can do this in 6 minutes, and then yeah, muscle memory just kicks in and you just do it.
How do you make ramen in 6 minutes?
I couldn't do it. I think that was a fast learned and fast unlearned skill. Couldn't do it again.
You mentioned your sous chefs who, you know, in that format you get to bring with you on these competitions. How did you choose like who was going to come with you and help out?
I mean, I knew immediately. I mean, they were the second I got that phone call, the next phone call was to Brandon Randolph and Donald Gonzalez. Both of them have, you know, worked for me or with me in many capacities and been chefs in other restaurants. But that's definitely not always the key. I think it's, you got to have somebody that you know thinks like you, that you don't have to say anything, that we can just, you know, give one word cues and we're all in sync. And these are two guys that I've cooked with for a lot in my life. And I knew they're the ones to bring.
Well, I mean, I know from doing Iron Chef Showdown, it is a beast. So the fact that you were able to go on and also beat Alex Guarnaschelli is certainly an accomplishment. And now you have a new challenge ahead. Without spoiling too much, you are on the new season of Tournament of Champions. So how terrifying is the randomizer in person?
It's absolute insanity. It's amazing when it comes to food competition because it makes it anyone's game. You know, I mean, walking in there with some of the 32 greatest chefs in the world. But then that randomizer, it's humbling. It brings everybody to an equal playing field. You never know what's going to come up, but it's absolutely ridiculous. Guy, you are crazy.
Was that your first time working with him?
It was in a real capacity. I just last week got back. I did a week of Guy's Grocery Games post-Tournament of Champions. But yeah, that was our first time working together.
I'm sure that was a nice change from being on stage, competing under the gun and just kind of being able to sit back and have fun on Guy's Grocery Games.
Oh, no, you haven't seen my episode yet. It was no relaxing and having fun.
No relaxing? Okay. I'm looking forward to seeing that. I mean, how does Tournament of Champions compare to other culinary competitions?
Yeah, I mean, it has all of the, you know, the things from other competitions, the time limit, the picking food, but having the randomizer choose and having the random bracket, you know, and especially with a seeding situation, you know, in the last couple seasons, we've seen a lot of upsets with number ones losing to, you know, number tens and this and that. So I think just the entire way it's put together, it's definitely in the chef's best interest because it puts everybody on an equal playing field, but it also makes things potentially crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I think the blind, you know, taste testing as well, the judges not knowing even who's competing at all. I think, like you said, it really puts everybody on that even playing field. So we'll look forward to seeing how you progress in that competition. You're also a fresh face on Chopped as a judge, which is super exciting. Who did you get to judge alongside on your first day?
Oh, man. Brooke Williamson and Mark Murphy, I think, were our day ones. We did an episode after that with Kwame, which was awesome.
Nice.
Yeah, I think I did 7 episodes in total. So we're in a whole gambit of awesome judges.
What is it like kind of being on that side of things, not actually having to compete, just getting to, you know, analyze what the other competitors are doing?
I mean, it's definitely better to be on that side of the table than the other. But there's a whole nother, you know, level of, you know, things that you have to do. I mean, you've got to speak eloquently. And at the end of the day, you're sending people home and crushing some dreams. So you have to make sure that your feedback is valid and true and your palate is right.
What never ceases to kind of amaze you when you're observing these competitors up there on Chopped?
I mean, it's intense. I mean, Chopped is crazy. And it's, I mean, unlike other things where you have, you know, 1 hour to do this or 30 minutes, I mean, they're making a full 3-course meal. So I'm always impressed when people come out on Chopped and make it through that day. I mean, it's a long day. It's an 8-10 hour day of just nonstop cooking. And there's no other show out there that makes you cook 3 separate meals in one day. So I'm impressed by everybody who does that.
That's nuts. I mean, as a judge, are you ever kind of in your head thinking about what you would do with those Chopped basket ingredients?
100%. I think all the judges do. I mean, as soon as the basket ingredients are revealed, I mean, all the judges get together and we're like, what would you do? What would you do? It's like we have an entire like game plan. And sometimes you just get the itch and like, oh, I just wish we could go out there and do it. But yeah, you can't help but look at that and try and figure out what you'd do.
Is there an ingredient out there either that you saw during one of your episodes or just, you know, in general that would hands down get yourself Chopped?
I mean, yes. I'm impressed at anybody who doesn't get Chopped on that show. I mean, we've had episodes with lettuce flavored ice cream with a savory dish with Christmas cupcakes. I mean, so many things. I mean, that's the whole point of the show, but there's so many, everything that comes out is meant to make you lose your mind.
Well, there are certainly so many exciting things happening for you as a public figure with your name, your career on the rise. What keeps you grounded?
Everything. I mean, knowing that none of this was intentional, it could all go away any day. You know, I'm just very happy to cook food and do it on a platform. I feel very blessed and grateful every day.
Well, it's been so fun to see your career develop, evolve, shoot up over the last couple of years since we first met. And this has been such a blast catching up with you and kind of hearing your story. We're going to finish things off with a few rapid fire questions. And then we have one final question that we ask all of our guests here on Food Network Obsessed. So rapid fire, guilty pleasure TV show.
I've been watching this show called Big Sky. I don't know if you, but okay. I don't watch a lot of like network TV, but it just like it sucked me in, and it's like on ABC and it's cheesy and I don't tell people I watch it.
Your ramen order.
Like show your ramen with pork and it's got to be a runny egg.
I agree. Tattoo that won't make sense to anyone but you.
Man, I have like 70 tattoos and most of them mean absolutely.
70?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, all kinds of little weird stuff. And most of them don't make any sense because I'll put anything on my body. I do have a tuna on my hand that everybody asks about that nobody would know. And it was after Top Chef, we all decided we'd get a tattoo that represented the last dish that we cooked on Top Chef before we got sent home.
Okay.
So most of us got some, you know, some weird connection to that. So I got a big yellowtail tuna on my hand.
What was your first tattoo?
My first tattoo was a chef hat that I drew after finals in culinary school. And I got the tattoo to make sure that I didn't quit the job. And I was like, well, if you get a tattoo, then you have to keep doing it because you can't get a chef hat. And then in 10 years, tell people you're not a chef.
All right. That's a good way to hold yourself accountable. Favorite way to unwind?
I mean, take a nap.
Fair. If we looked at your Spotify account search, what would we find?
A lot of Rufus Du Sol, probably a lot of Rick Ross. There's two different sides. I'm either chilling or getting real aggressive.
All right. A hidden gem in St. Paul that you love.
There's a really cool bar called the White Squirrel Bar. It holds like 20 people, but they tend to pack 60 people in there, but they don't have a phone number or a website or anything. You just find it and they've got generally awesome live music and just a cool little hole in the wall.
Very cool. Favorite streetwear brand other than Hybrid Nation?
I like a lot of Off-White, Kith, Bathing Ape.
person you would love to sit down to dinner with?
Can I have dinner with Barack Obama and Jay-Z?
Sure. Yeah. I love it. Our final question, as I teased, we asked this to everybody on Food Network Obsessed before we let you go. And it is a question that obviously elicits a lot of different responses. What would be on the menu for your perfect food day? So we want you to take us through the entire progression of meals throughout the day. Breakfast, lunch, you can throw in some snacks if you want. You don't have to. Dinner, and then dessert if you're a dessert person. There basically are no rules. So you can time travel, spend absurd amounts of money. Anybody can serve you these meals. You could cook them if you want. We just want to hear what your ideal food day would be.
I'd probably have some Eggs Benedict in the morning, like with a ham. You know, maybe I'll have like Thomas Keller make a homemade hollandaise for me in my house. Like, I don't want to leave the house.
Yeah, of course.
He's coming to you.
He's okay.
Coming to me.
I like that.
Yes, I'll be wearing a robe and only a robe. And then, yes, Thomas Keller is going to make a hollandaise, do a good Eggs Benedict. Probably going to go to Japan and get a bowl of ramen in Kyoto and get some Kobe beef right out of Kyoto. After that, I think I'm a big, like, I like to taste a lot of different things. So I think there'd just be a smorgasbord. Definitely king crab. I'm a huge, huge, huge steak fan. So we'd probably have, man, now I'm hungry.
So wait, that's for dinner? You just have like this huge like smorgasbord?
Yeah, huge smorgasbord for dinner. I'm not a big dessert person, but I like, you know, cheeses and fruits and things like that. So I think I'd just be somewhere in France having just a plate of all of the greatest cheeses in the world, with a lot of wine and some fruit and nothing too sweet, because we're gonna do it again.
All right. Well, that sounds lovely, especially right now in the midst of winter here in New York and also Minnesota. I'm sure we'd like to be in France just sipping on some wine and eating some cheese as well. So thank you so much for taking the time. We are looking forward to seeing you in action in a bunch of different Food Network shows. And we'll be rooting for you on Tournament of Champions.
Awesome. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. Good to see you.
Such a delight chatting with Justin today. I'm so looking forward to watching him on the new season of Tournament of Champions, premiering February 27th at 8/7 Central on Food Network and streaming on Discovery Plus. Thanks so much for listening, and make sure to follow us wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a thing. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and review. We love it when you do that. That's all for now. We'll catch you foodies next Friday.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.